Thank you for joining us and welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C. Now, there's no doubt that people spend more time today interacting with technology than they ever did at any point in human history. From watching TV, reading, listening to music, and of late checking or updating our social media, human consumption and interaction with technology is growing and continues to grow at a pace that is far higher than we ever imagined. And because of this interaction, technology continues to fundamentally and incrementally affect every facet of our daily lives. Technology shapes how we work, how we communicate, our relationships with other people, to our health. I mean, you don't have to look far to see all the technological advancements that have been made in the field of medicine and all other aspects of healthcare. But as much as we credit these advances in technology with improving our lives, there are numerous questions about how our dependence on it is affecting us as individuals and our society as a whole. And one of the most important concerns that we hope to explore today is how technology shapes or affects our common values and ethics as a society. Studies show that most of the technology that we interface with in our daily lives determines how we understand the concepts of relationships, of family, our environment, our politics, etc. So, do you feel like there has been a decline in how we understand our individual responsibility to the collective good of our society? How about your personal relationships? At school, at work, and at home. Are they changing? Are they improving? Let's talk. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Let's start off by listening to some of your opinions about this topic.
If I tell you, say I love you. It could be positive or negative, depending on how you're handling the technological issues or gadgets or developments that are coming in. Marriages are breaking up. But people are also doing school easily with the coming in of technology. So it depends on how you make use of the technology for it to be beneficial to you or detrimental.
To say the fact we can't run away from technology, but to some extent, when you are on Facebook or on WhatsApp, you find that among five people, you can't interact because everybody is online, chatting with a person who is far from those who are near. Even in the family, you can find that mom is on WhatsApp, dad is on Twitter, interacting with people outside the family. This is affecting the social life of a family.
But on the other side, it is for the betterment, for an advanced development agenda. Maybe we need some drugs to buy from the internet, maybe our kids, school materials and what have you. But we cannot run away from the fact that it is bringing us more confusion than the good part of it.
In fact, people are misusing the freedom which we are enjoying due to the coming in of social media. For example, people are free to fabricate stories, damaging the image of other people.
And I can also add on the negative aspect, because nowadays it is violating people's rights. For example, when there is an accident, people will take pictures of victims and then they will post it on Facebook without the victim's permission or without the family of the victim permission.
Traffic go before more put on protest to low, but we not for the type of deep and kalu kalu, tulun tulun, all dog, pulling bone. Shake your body for this, now you're gonna be all natural and don't camp for batu. Thanks up, bobona bobo, brana bra. Hey, listeners out there, listen up, okay? This is Upfront. You're listening to Jackson and Nadia, D-Saj.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. Thank you for joining us. My name is Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C. and Nadia Sam is in Johannesburg, South Africa. Now, over the last decade, we continue to witness tremendous social cultural changes that are a result of our increased access to technology. There's no doubt that social networking sites have become the primary platforms for our social activities. Like one expert in the field says, the virtual life is becoming more social than the physical life. My guests, who are college students, by the way, Yasma Williams and Cindy Simba, agree.
It's all around us and it's so readily available that it has become like kind of a part, an everyday part of life. It used to be that certain like digital technological innovations were not as readily available. People didn't always have cell phones with them, mm-hmm. or like the phones that they did have weren't able to do as much as the smartphones that are currently readily available.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of why people have more... Yeah, it's more...
it's more digital. Accessible.
Yes.
And it does a lot, right?
Exactly.
And you have a little computer in your hands.
In your pocket.
With your cell phone.
And along with it being accessible, I think people, there's like a social expectation since you have access to all this information and all of this like technology, you're supposed to be using it now. Because if someone tells you like they don't have social media, you're
right.
like, what are you doing?
Right.
Like, why
you're
are you
supposed to be plugged in?
You're supposed to be plugged in. And like everyone has like a real life personality and everyone has like a social media personality.
An online personality.
Exactly.
What is your online personality?
I guess not like an actual different personality, but like everyone has an online presence. That's the better word to use.
Presence.
Yeah.
But it's also true that people are different online than they are in real.
Yeah, I mean, that's why people say like, social media is not real life.
it's a slice of real life.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But it's also, it can be very staged. It's a place where you can choose how you present yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel that you ever know people these days? If we have these dual personalities, mm-hmm. for lack of a better way to put it, you know, an online personality that you behave a certain way, you communicate a different way when you're online, mm-hmm. and then in person as we communicate or collaborate or interact, that you have a very different personality. Like, do I ever know who you are?
Yeah, I think that it depends on how much you interact with a person. Like my friends, the ones that I see on a regular basis that I keep up with, then I feel like I know them. But I feel like with social media, it gives you like a false sense of knowing someone because they are kind of showing you like what they want the world to see.
Mm.
And sometimes if you meet them in real life, you're kind of like, you're a little bit different than how hyped up all your posts were.
Right. Yeah. So their persona,
yeah.
their character, and physically sometimes too.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Because even though people... I think it's easier to see it on social media, but like people do that every single day. Mm. Everyone puts their mask on and act in a way that they think is... they're supposed to act, or they think that is like the social standard.
Have you ever had an experience where you met somebody in real life that you knew on the interwebs and things went differently than you expected?
Yeah, there was like this blogger Instagram person that I followed, and I just thought like we shared the same things in common, like, you know, working out, eating healthy, and traveling. And then when you meet her in real life, I'm like, oh wow,
they're gouging on ice cream and stuff.
What?
And hot dogs.
No, it's not even that. Like their personality was so different, and I'm talking to them. I'm like, oh, we don't even click. We might have this. We might like the same interests, but we have totally different senses of humors.
Yeah,
we have totally
yeah.
different life perspectives. And I was just kind of like, oh, wow. It was kind of one of those realizations that just because you like, you know, interact with someone through social media doesn't necessarily.
Because when you're in real life, it's harder to craft like on the spot, like exactly who you want to tailor yourself to be. Like I have mm-hmm. actually have like a better experience. Like one of my best friends that we similar kind of situation. We both were like decent in the online world, both had like our own little following or whatever. And like, I was like, oh, she's really cool. And then we finally met up in real life and she was exactly the same person. So I think
you had a different experience from Cindy.
Mm-hmm. I think
your person matched
exactly.
their online personality.
I think for some people, they use it as an extension of their personality as who they are and they are just broadcasting it to more people. But
Good
other
point.
People, they're using it to create who they want to be and
right.
who they want mm-hmm. to project themselves to be. So... you have everyone in the mix of trying to do a whole bunch of different things.
Let's talk about this over-dependence on technology mm-hmm. and what we see as a tendency to get lazy. You know, people usually are very active online,
mm-hmm.
But then when you meet them, or if you ever get to meet them, people are just more vibrant online. but they don't really like to socialize in person?
That is a tricky question. Mm-hmm. Because, like, to make an online presence, a lot of what people do, like, they go out and do stuff, but it's mm-hmm. like they do stuff to take pictures so mm-hmm. other people know that they're doing stuff.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think that the only time that, like, people interaction has reduced, I think, is maybe people preferring to, like, text each other more instead of, like, meeting up with your friends in real life. You, like, you know, snap them and stuff like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But people that are really active on social media, they tend to just, like, go out all the time so they can have content to put on
exactly.
their social
yeah.
media pages.
Okay, but so it's not true that people have become lazier to interact in this age of social media than
no,
they...
I think, if anything, we're interacting all the time. We're like, I was saying
yeah,
before.
It takes away privacy.
That it does take away privacy.
People are interacting
so you're saying it's a little too much.
Yeah, to the point
I
where...
I think to an extent.
It takes away privacy.
Yeah.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, D.C. We're talking about technology, how technology shapes how we work, how we communicate, and our relationships. And in studio with me are two college students, Cindy Simba and Yasma Williams. And earlier on in the show, we had some very interesting opinions of our listeners in Malawi. And we will continue with our conversation with Yasma and Cindy in a minute. But first, let's get Nadia Sami, who is in South Africa, Johannesburg, South Africa, to weigh in on our topic.
You know, Jackson, when we talk about how technology affects our lives, there are two things that come to mind particularly. The one is the value of relationships. And it's really twofold because... you know, social networks like Facebook allow us to get into contact with long-lost friends, with people who live on opposite sides of the world, and allows us to have a glimpse into their lives, which we wouldn't have otherwise had. But at the same time, if you think about the interactions you have with people via Facebook, Twitter, etc., it's these conversations and exchanges in, you know, a few hundred characters. It's very superficial versus the interaction you'd have with someone in person. So if you went over to someone's house for lunch or for coffee or barbecue, and you actually have that interpersonal communication, you can look into someone's eyes, you can touch them, you can give them a hug, etc. It's just a much richer, warmer experience. Recently, I saw a television advert, which was very cleverly done. It had people hold placards of things that they would say online on social media, or they would have little thumbs up to indicate likes. And so people would be standing there with their little placards of what they would be saying in a few hundred characters, or be standing there with like signs. And then they said, okay, now have that same kind of exchange, but this time you're going to do it in person. And they had them go up to their friends and go up to other people and actually speak to them in person and have a normal exchange. And I mean, I can't even begin to tell you what a big difference it was, right? You had a much, much more wholesome, richer experience. You had deeper conversations happening. You had actual changes affecting in people's lives. You had plans for further interactions being made. And so it was a real good display of how we interact differently online behind a keyboard compared to when we actually speak to people in person.
And Nadia, there have been a couple of studies on this particular topic, but one of the recent studies that caught my eye is a study in the Journal of Youth Studies that says that a high number of young people usually wake up in the middle of the night to check their social media feeds. This is, again, not limited to young people. Studies have shown that bringing technology into the bedroom has a detrimental effect on your health and relationships for both young and old people alike.
And I think most of us are guilty of it. At night, you're in bed, you've put the light off, but you're sitting there with your phone, so you're on You're either reading news or you're on social media or whatever it is you're doing, but you're in a dark room and you're staring into this little gadget in your hands. And I mean, it does affect sleep. I would argue that it does affect sleep. I'm guilty of this all the time. You know, I sit there in the evening and I've got my phone and I'm falling asleep with my phone in my hand. And even as I'm doing it, it's irritating me that I'm doing it. But it speaks to that kind of addiction that we have with our technology. We feel so hamstrung. We feel as if a limb has been cut off if we suddenly can't use our phones or we can't use our technology or, you know, for whatever reason, the Wi-Fi has been cut off and suddenly you literally feel cut off from the world because we've become so dependent on it. And something that's becoming quite popular, Jackson, is for people to actually go on little breaks from social media, to actually have a little hiatus from your Facebook account, and to just have a little bit of a detox, you know. Recently, we went on a trip into the mountains, and it was deep into the mountains, and there was, of course, no network. There were no TVs. And initially it felt strange, you know. It felt strange because that natural extension of yours, which is your phone, is suddenly not available. And it took a little bit of getting used to, but soon after that, we were so engrossed in conversations, we were reading books, we were playing games, and it was just such a beautiful experience. And I think it's important for people to have every now and then. I mean, it is difficult. A lot of our work relies on social media and being able to access news immediately. But at the same time, it's also good for your soul and your brain and for your fingers to just have a little break from that technology.
Thank you very much, Nadia. That's Nadia Samish. She's in Johannesburg, South Africa. So what do our listeners in Kampala, Uganda, think about this?
My name is Daniel Magara. On the question of technology distracting us from human relationships, my opinion is that technology is, well, obviously doing both good and bad, but in my opinion, it's doing more good than bad. Television helps us to know about different cultures. The internet helps us to know about different cultures. That technology has contributed in building our human relationships. In my opinion, definitely more good than harm.
My name is Miriam Pavito and I'm from Kampala. I actually think technology distracts human relationships. Being a married woman, when you reach home but you can't really talk to your husband because you think you've called him, maybe you've sent him a WhatsApp, maybe he has told you how he is, so you don't need to ask him how are you or something of that sort. Like friends, my parents apparently, I don't need to go where they are. I don't need to go back home to check on them because I can check on them anytime. Facebook, what is on my, your mind? You're always putting what is on my mind. WhatsApp status, you're always putting what is on your status. Baby, they confuse me, yo, with the
bomb. Thanks to you guys in Kampala, Uganda, for your very insightful text on our topic today. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I am Jackson Vunganyi. Now, let's get back to the studio with Yasma Williams and Cindy Simba. So, guys, there's no doubt that most of your relationships or your friendships are constructed or conducted mostly online. And this is done in a context that is stripped of many of the most of the personal aspects of communication. Let me ask you, can you explain to me the meaning of FOMO? What is FOMO?
Fear of missing out.
Yeah.
It's so real.
It's real, but and it's so overrated. Like, most of the time when, again, because online you can present situations a certain way and people usually don't list their negatives. So FOMO is so overrated.
But I think it's another.
See, FOMO is such a new thing that only you guys can get it. Like, you
no,
know, people
I
who
don't
are
think so.
A little older wouldn't even, aside from knowing it, they don't really care so much.
I think
about
y'all
it.
Would call it like opportunity paralysis of like when you have so many things.
Opportunity paralysis.
It's like when you have so many things that you could potentially do, you
right.
kind of freeze up and you're like.
Opportunity cost,
like economics.
Right.
Like it's the same concept, but we just have.
Is that a sociological concept? Opportunity paralysis.
I feel like with older people, there wasn't these like technologies that allow you to see where everyone is at pretty much any given
moment.
Didn't care. Yeah, so it was less like, oh, I don't really care. Like, are you going to? There's like almost like fewer options as well because you're only interacting with people that you actually know.
Mm.
But over social media, it's like you can. Like acquaintances, you can see what they're doing and the events that are happening, and so you kind of feel like this, oh, I should go out,
especially if like you see your friends like when they're all doing stuff together and you're like, why wasn't I invited?
Right
Like there's a thing here, I'll show you, I'll pull it up, obviously they can't see it.
Yasma is pulling out an app.
This is Snapchat. So okay, mm-hmm. now you put it on your face camera, and like this is a new feature they have on Snapchat. So you zoom out,
mm-hmm.
and then it shows you where all your friends are.
It's like geotagging.
Like geotagging, yeah. So, like, I can see where all my friends are.
Where are your friends right now?
So, my friends, they're at work, but...
All your friends are at work.
All my friends are at work right now.
So, they can't hide anymore.
They can't hide. But then you see all my Atlanta friends are all in the same
geographical area.
Mm-hmm. And then you can...
So, if they were at a party... Mm-hmm. and you were not invited, you would know.
Yeah, I would know automatically because I would see them all clustered in one area and I'd be like, my little Bitmoji is not in this area.
That is a whole different topic, by the way, in itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But let's explore a little further this idea of fear of missing out. But this time, talk about people who tend to want to compete with each other in terms mm-hmm. of where they've been or what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think with social media, where you like people are always some people get like obsessed with followers,
mm-hmm.
and they kind of like there was actually this influencer that quit social media entirely because for her it was kind of like toxic in her life.
Mm-hmm. Was it the Australian girl?
Yeah, Esana O'Neill.
Yeah.
Social media is not real life.
Yes. Right. That was a big moment, a cultural moment too, because she was such a big influencer. Right?
Yeah.
I don't remember reading so much about her, but I remember that story.
Yeah, and the thing is that it turns into like a business because where brands approach you as an influencer to advertise their products.
Mm-hmm.
And so people... I've seen this on Instagram where somebody already has a ton of followers, but they still advertise their own website, or they're still like plugging their own
merchandise
account.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Even with the large following. And I think it can be, there's like a toxic aspect of it. And it also, research shows that people who spend more time on social media tend to be less happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they see everyone else having fun because, again, there's an image that is crafted.
Right.
And so they feel like, inadequate.
They're being left out.
Yeah, they feel
inadequate.
And
now this new geotagging thing is that's what I was telling you about, this whole other conversation. But the other side of this is that people now are more willing to take out their cameras and film something instead of, say, helping out. For example, this the story of these kids in Florida who filmed a man who was drowning. And they could have helped him, but they decided not to because they, you know, they wanted to...
have their 15 seconds of fame. Yeah, I think there's a good thing and a bad thing about being able to film all the time and, like, easily broadcast, like, what it is that you're doing. Because, like, you see in instances like Syria, we're getting some of our best coverage of Syria from people who are living there who can just live stream it. And in that case, it's showing the atrocity, so we're able to see in real time what's going on. But in these cases, it's, like, spectatorship and its worst degree of where, like, you're so consumed about what other people are going to see from you posting it that you do nothing.
And hopefully that you hope to get more viewers or listeners or followers. So the question then, Simba, who is writing the rules? You know, as a society, we pride ourselves at having a common set of values or rules of ethics that guide us in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a whole new frontier that we're exploring right now. It feels like the Wild West of technology.
Absolutely.
You know? Who's going to write the rules?
I would say that like unwritten rules already exist. But I think that some things don't like come up until they're already an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For example, with the whole privacy thing, like people were revealing a lot through technology and it kind of like backfires sometimes. And I think now people are starting to realize more like you should be careful what you post. And so when it comes to like who should write the rules, I think it should be use it to your discretion and just encourage better judgment.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, I would agree that as of right now, we kind of have like a checks and balances system on each other. Like, we're talking about this because we as a these three people in this room, we think as our societal values, like that doesn't match up with what we believe in of like you should step in if you see something like that. So even these little things, like we're checking each other as to what is appropriate and what isn't. But I think right now, yeah, like I agree with you. It's the wild, wild west out there and we're all in a situation where we're not only trying to live in this new world, but also to create it in a new way.
And write rules.
And write rules and regulations. And so I think it's up to all of us on how we go about this and how we let it dictate our lives.
Now, the question is, again, is that this is an ever-changing, fast-moving, evolving society.
Yes.
Technology is, in a way, overtaking our ability to be able to understand it and comprehend it. Mm-hmm. You get an iPhone 7 and 2 months later, before you even use all the features on it, there's an iPhone 8. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this going?
I think there's a lot of different theories, like that eventually we're going to cap out, that as a society that there's only so much that we can do and that artificial intelligence is going to take over and this, that, and the other. But I think what we need to keep in mind is that evolution isn't always progress.
Right.
And while it can be, that progress for some doesn't mean progress for all. And I think I'm pretty confident that artificial intelligence and more automation is going to be the future. But in doing that, a lot of people are going to lose jobs. A lot of people are going to become obsolete. So we're in the right now, before that happens, we have to start thinking of what are we going to do with all of these people?
People who are going to be jobless.
People who are going to be jobless and people who...
Whose jobs are being taken over or going to be taken over by technology.
Exactly, because we saw that in the Industrial Revolution, like that first wave of it. But it's gonna get better for some and worse for others. So we have to take that into account.
You guys are still students.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Give me an understanding of how you guys are using technology at school these days in socializing or interacting with each other, but also learning.
Well, I would say I'm a little bit surprised in some of my classes when you get in there and the professor's like, okay, no laptops, no technology. Mm. But I would say it makes it easier to like do research since... you can, like, I know there's times when I'm in a place where I have a long waiting period and I could just, like, look up the lecture notes on my phone or do my research there. So there's some positives, but there's also some negatives because technology can be a source of distraction. Mm-hmm. And so that's what most professors have found. They're like, okay, we don't want, like, your peers to be distracted behind you. And so to, like... turn off the laptops. And I kind of I've found that there's still like a joy in learning without it. I've been forced to be in lectures where I'm taking notes, I'm actively listening.
The old school way.
Yeah, it's the old school way. And yes, all the slides are available online and you use technology to communicate with your professor, but being in those rooms kind of like reminds me that like having technology doesn't necessarily make like gathering certain information easier. Sometimes it's still good to
just go the old school way of researching, opening a textbook and reading it.
Yeah, you know?
But on the flip side of that, there's a lot of people, myself included, that like when I got to high school, I was able to go to a really, really good school. But before that, like my school was really, really underfunded. And there was a lot of things that I wanted to learn that I couldn't, that my school just didn't have the resources for. And so the internet was really like a haven for me because there's so much information at your fingertips. And it's just grown exponentially even since I was that young. And like there's sites like Lynda and Khan Academy that anything that I want to learn about and really dive deep into, I can. And I think it's really useful for people who are in situations where they can't go to college. They can't go to a normal setting, but there's still these skills and this information. Leg over. My baby, give me leg over.
Hangover. Thank you, Cindy Simba and Yasma Williams. Cindy goes to the University of Minnesota, and Yasma goes to the University of Georgia. They're both on social media. You should check them out. And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Thanks to my two guests and to all our listeners who contributed to the show. We always appreciate hearing from you. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. On Facebook, type in Upfront Africa Show. You can connect with me on Twitter. You can also check out our Upfront Show page on voanews.com. And on SoundCloud. So feel free to leave a message or comment and let us know where you're listening in from. Catch you again, same time, right here on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi. Goodbye.